Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies, TV, and all kinds of nerdy stuff way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin Schiller, and our special guest is Cody Leach. How are you guys, or Griffin, how are you doing?
I'm all right, you know, other than the fact that my power's out for like the nth time because LA doesn't know how to handle rain. But other than that, I'm great. I'm coming to you from my phone in a headphone mic, so very below quality, but we're going to make the best of it. Also, I just realized that I'm doing my best H3H3 impression with the fucking beanie, so that's great.
Whoa, language. My mother listens to this. Careful there.
Yeah.
Actually, both of you, I guess, are going for the beanie look. Cody, how are you?
I'm not doing too bad. I'm a little bit tired, and we're going to do this, and then I'm going to jump right back into Sean's favorite franchise and do my Leprechaun 2 review.
Oh, dear.
Nice. You are using your time very wisely. So I guess the last time we did one of these podcasts was a couple months back when WandaVision had just debuted. I planned to do a podcast in February, but reality decided to cause some troubles for me. My wife had COVID at the end of January, beginning of February. No big concerns or anything, but obviously a disruption for life. And then I had my own power issues because there was this Texas snowmageddon where we had crazy amounts of snow and freezing temperatures, the likes of which Texas has not seen on record. It's never been on record that cold for that long before. And so Texas couldn't handle it, and the power grid failed for the entire state. So my house didn't have power for 4 days, so it's tough to make videos, watch stuff. So I just kind of fell behind on everything for a little bit there.
Excuses.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. It's like I started watching Game of Thrones during all of this, and people are like, why haven't you watched Game of Thrones season 3? It's like, well, because I was stuck at my in-laws sharing a room with my kids, and I didn't think it would be a good, you know, red wedding family movie night type situation.
Come on.
Or maybe a great idea. Like, you know,
you see, children, this is called incest.
Let me teach you some new terms and traumatize you.
Yes.
So that's what's kind of happened. Here's what we got for today. We're going to talk about WandaVision an awful lot for the first, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes of this. We kind of break everything down, what we enjoyed, what really didn't work for us. And it'll be spoiler filled. So if you haven't watched WandaVision yet, leave. I don't know why you'd look at that thumbnail and click on it, but this is not the podcast for you. And as well, then we'll dive into kind of our final expectations for Justice League that comes out next week. And so our final guesses as to the quality, reception, all that fun stuff, what we think will happen with it. And then some new movies have started to come out. So I'll have a little movie talk, movie discussion, and then we'll close out with some Q&A, whatever people have for us. So hopefully lots of fun stuff for us to discuss. If you're watching this in the future, I'll try and put those time codes down below so you can just jump ahead to the specific questions, topics that we discussed. And if you are listening on any of your favorite podcast locations, be sure to leave a review, a rating. I am planning to bring this back at a more regular frequency. I'm thinking every 2 weeks as opposed to weekly, at least until movies start returning. But I do plan to come back at about 2 weeks and to be able to chime in on Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And then after that, movies actually start coming out pretty regularly. So pretty excited. Yeah. Movies are coming out again.
I know. Well, in California now, in LA, in like Orange County, they just said this Saturday, theaters are going to reopen and indoor dining is also going to reopen. So like, that's a big, you know, because it's a big movie market. That's a big sort of like turning the page sort of thing there. So yeah, I might actually be able to see Kong versus Godzilla in a theater, which is kind of the most important thing right now.
That's true. Objectively speaking, that's probably the most important thing happening in the world right now. It's preparation for that movie on the big screen.
Yeah.
With that said, let's just dive into our first topic of conversation, which is the question, was WandaVision fantastic, flawed, or a total failure? And so I put out my reviews this past weekend, put out my two big, gigantic rankings I'm looking to do for it, and reactions have kind of been all over the place on this one. I mean, there are people declaring it one of the best things in the MCU. There's people like, this thing totally lost it in the final few episodes. People are feeling all kinds of things on it. So we'll start with you, Griffin. because your starting point was pure brilliance as per this post that was put out by Paul Bettany himself. Pure brilliance. You put out a actual video where or you said it was perfect right before our final little bit.
I know dropped. I shouldn't have done that. In hindsight, I really should have waited. But, you know, I didn't want to have to completely redo all the writing I had done for the past 2 months. Look, I think if you look at the series up until the final episode, everything really works for me. I think it's a very interesting exploration of all the trauma that Wanda has gone through and the grief. I think when you look at the, which I mean, obviously that's what everyone says, those are the talking points. Oh, it's grief, it's trauma. They're just buzzwords, you know, they don't actually mean anything now. But like, I think when you look at the finale, what it does is it shows that the things that the film, that the series was going for, like that deep introspective character drama, that stuff really, like, you know, kind of rises to the top. But then also the stuff that maybe wasn't working for a lot of people, like the sword stuff or everything outside of the hex, really sinks it. And so I don't, you know, the more I think about the finale, the less I like it. And the more I sort of think that it undoes a lot of the good stuff that the show had going for it. But as a whole, I still think it's a very excellent show that really went, you know, and tried to do something interesting and different and took big swings to an extent. I honestly think that had they cut out all the sword noise, cut out all the setup for, you know, Captain Marvel 2 and, you know, whatever was going on, and just focused on the character drama, that the show would have been better in the long run. And yeah, it probably would have alienated a lot of hardcore MCU fans who wanted the action stuff. But as we see in the final episode, the action is god awful. I mean, it's legitimately some of the worst action I've ever seen in the MCU. And I mean that as someone who likes the series. But like, when you think about where we started with like the sitcom thing and like the mystery box element and like the, you know, the Twin Peaks-esque sort of stuff that was going on there, that was interesting. And I wish that it carried that through throughout the entirety of the show. And for the most part, it succeeded in the character stuff. And I think Wanda emerges as a character that's really fascinating, multifaceted, and someone that you want to spend more time with and explore. Unfortunately, the finale sort of lets her off the hook for a lot of the stuff that she does in the show. And I think, I mean, like, realistically, she should have been the villain of the entire series. They didn't need Agatha Harkness or whatever. And it kind of eventually divulges into just MCU shtick. So listen, I mean, I'm sure we'll go into in depth about a lot of this stuff, but like, as someone who genuinely loves the show, legitimately up until the final episode, it has problems, and I have it in my top 10 in terms of MCU projects, but like, it's definitely, you know, it was at the top, and as the weeks kind of went, it sort of fell towards the bottom. But that's sort of where I stand right now.
Cody, where are you at with this show?
Ugh, failure. No, I think it was flawed as well. I like the show. I was never like crazy about it. I was never to the point where I couldn't wait to discuss it. I was going to work talking about it. I was checking, you know, theories and everything online. It was something where I watched the first three episodes. I was like, okay, this isn't a neat little novelty. This is an interesting idea. It's different, if nothing else.
Right.
But I really had no idea where they were going with it. I think most of us thought that way whenever they just cut you off at three episodes and they're like, see you in 3 weeks. By the time it got to episode, I'll say six, the Malcolm in the Middle one, is when I really started to come around, and I'm like, okay, I dig this. This is cool. This is something that's fun to have once a week. I kind of had a bit of a roller coaster with my opinion on releasing it weekly versus binging it.
I did too, but I still haven't decided where I've landed yet.
I have. I started off and I was like, okay, this is weird to do weekly. I don't think you can grasp what this is trying to do week to week. Then about episode six, I was like, you know, seeing all the Twitter posts and everything, I was like, okay, I get it now. I understand that there's a lot of fun to be had getting little nuggets at the end and speculating, and you have the comic book aficionados that know all the character names and all the comics that this is paying tribute to, and then you got the layman that are just like, I don't know anything, I just know the movies, who are these characters, and everything in the middle. And so I kind of went to that camp about episode six. I was like, okay, I like it week to week. And then by the time you got to the finale, for me, a lot of it dropped the ball in that last episode. And I ended up going, OK, I would have enjoyed this whole thing better if I could have just watched it, because I feel like a lot of the speculation, a lot of the teasing, a lot of the even deliberately by stars of the show kind of hyping certain things up right. that never came to fruition really just took back some of my enjoyment. But I love the novelty of it. I love the fact that we got to focus so much on Wanda and Vision, because especially Vision, those are two characters that by the end of Endgame, you're like, I like them, but I just feel like I wanted more. I should have had more time with them because Vision's so cool, but he was just like barely there. This show kind of fixes that. And it does make me intrigued on where we're going to find Wanda in the Doctor Strange movie or wherever else she shows up. But I felt like the 45-40 minute runtime started to hinder the show after the first couple episodes. I got it for the black and white episodes. You can't have an hour long 50s sitcom. But once it started to get into all the different storylines, I felt like the breakneck pace of the show made things like the sword side of the storyline just feel like fluff because you never had enough time to really marinate in it. And a couple of things by the end, which Griffin already said, letting her off the hook didn't really feel like a very satisfying ending. We don't know what they're going to do with her. That's the thing about these Marvel properties. What happens now is going to mm-hmm. affect five other things. So we might feel differently after we see the next six movies. But that felt a little off to me. I hated the action and I was really disappointed with what Evan Peters ended up being.
Right. Mm. Yeah. So for me, I still can't even figure out exactly where I'm at on some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
because when the first three episodes, I was like, all right, I don't know what this is because you gave me no context.
Yeah.
And this is just too sudden. And then we get episode four that gives you the context and kind of teases a bunch of things. So I started to get kind of like really into enjoying the week-to-week speculation. So one of my favorite entire things about the journey that was WandaVision was the week-to-week speculation of like, what did all this mean?
Same.
Wow, okay, Evan Peters just showed up. What could this possibly mean? Okay, I saw a symbol there. Okay, this guy could be this person. Who's this engineer? Okay. And the whole nature of the first three episodes was, what on earth is going on? To raise these questions in our minds, to make us wonder what's going to happen. And then we get to a point in time when it's giving answers and teasing potential future things that make you go, whoa, this could get really, really interesting. And then so for me, when we moved into the final two episodes, a little bit of the third from last episode, whatever, the final three episodes, call it that, and we were really getting answers, it just felt like the safest direction or the easiest answer. Like they bait and switched us pretty explicitly. And it's not, and it was real frustrating because I put out my review of the next to last episode and I had all these people in the comment section being like, oh, just sounds like you're mad because your theory didn't come true. Oh, just sounds like you're mad because you got yourself too hyped up on the game and you were thinking all too big. And I was like, and I was trying to like, you know, my default is to like, go like, okay, did I do that? Like, no, I'm not like obsessing. I'm just watching it. I'm playing the game they told me to play. Mm-hmm. They told me like created a show where they dropped me into the middle of a 50s sitcom and went, go figure it out. And I didn't know what was going on. I was like, okay, guessing. And I was along for the ride. And so when you started giving me more, I was getting in and into it. And so then when you get to the last few episodes and it was like, yeah, that engineer that we kind of awkwardly, you know, that we are waiting to hear about Reed Richards. So, you know, when you talk about this engineer that we're going to start piecing things together, when you bring someone else over from the Fox universe, of course, we're going to start trying to piece things together of like, what could this mean? Because we know you're headed towards Multiverse of Madness. Of course, I'm going to think that. Of course, that's where my mind's going to go. And so when it gets to the end of it and it's kind of the most straightforward interpretation, it just feels like you teased me on some stuff that you weren't actually going in that direction. You used that to draw me in, but it didn't mean nearly as much as it meant to. And so it's just frustrating because I really enjoyed the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And once like episodes four through up until about eight, really enjoyed the journey. And I was actually less disappointed by the last episode than both of you were because episode eight was the one where it was like, okay, this isn't going to be what I thought it was going to be. So sure, punch people in the face. But then, like what you guys mentioned of it, it very much bothered me that we get to the end of it and it's like, we got to make sure that Hayward is arrested. But Wanda, you know, people frowned at her, but you know, we have to affirm her. Monica's like, they'll never know what you gave up. Like, you're not acknowledging what you took from them. Like, you have to acknowledge you literally kidnapped people. And I've had so many strange debates in Twitter and the comment section of like people like, but she didn't know she was hurting them. She thought they were happy. Like, but you don't get to do that. You don't get to steal people just because you think that you're putting them in a dream. And Vision screamed at her. You don't have the right to choose that. He screamed it at her and she kept going down that path.
I was just gonna say they never committed to like saying that she's flat out wrong. Like they had Vision was the voice of reason to an extent, but then they sort of like cut that off. And then in the ending when she's like you'll never. I hated that line because it's so like one sided of that entire thing, and it was also just a waste of an exchange between those two, because those two had a lot in common, and I thought there was a lot of room to sort of like establish that bond and have them sort of like talk about their shared grief and whatnot. And we only get like two scenes, and one of which she's saying like, no, Wanda, it's okay. You can enslave these people and, you know, take their free will away from them. That never sat right with me. That was like really weird.
I mean, you actually had people walk up to her and said, if you're not going to let me go, can you just kill me?
Right.
That's like among the darkest lines that we've seen in the MCU. But speaking to what you were saying about like, you know, the building up and the disappointment, I think the fan response makes that all the more frustrating, because you get the two loud camps of it's the worst thing ever and it's genius, but your theories just didn't come true, so you're butthurt about it.
Yeah.
And it just blows my mind how you can just have that. I kind of got annoyed because I had the same people that I saw on Twitter that were like talking down to people that would have rather watched this at once instead of week to week, and saying you don't understand, it's about speculation and it's about, you know, getting to the end and theorizing. And then it's the same exact people that after episode 9 are like, you're just mad because your theories didn't come right. It's like, you can't have both. You can't do both. And I mean, that's literally like Kevin Feige saying, all right, guys, I'm announcing right now, Hugh Jackman will be in Deadpool 3. And we freak out for a year. And then we go see the movie, and it's literally just Hugh Jackman playing a guy named Ralph Boner. Yeah, and it's like, well, we didn't tell you he was playing Wolverine. Your expectations messed you up. And it's like, it doesn't work that way. Like you said, when you put Evan Peters in the show to play Quicksilver, as soon as he shows up, nobody's excited because they love Evan Peters. They're excited because X-Men.
Right.
This is it. This is when it's happening.
And there's all this surrounding dialogue as well that made like, I'm going, this could this mean this? She's going to gain powers. Is that how, like, you're filling all the gaps like the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Be like, could this mean all of this stuff? Not because we're crazy. That's the game they told us to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Griffin, well, you were saying?
Well, no, that's the weird thing about it, is because it's like just the casting of the casting of him in the series doesn't make any sense if he's just going to be Ralph Boner. And like, admittedly, I thought it was funny. I didn't hate it as much as a lot of people. But like, the more I think on it, the more I'm like, that was just like a really strange choice, because one, the people who actually know who he is and are fans of the X-Men franchise and whatnot and see him coming into the MCU are going to get really excited, because they're like, oh, is he going to be Quicksilver? Or is like, what's going to go on here? Is there something more to this casting than just Evan Peters in the MCU?
Right.
And then the people who, because I know a fair amount of casual fans who don't really bother with the Fox X-Men film, and they were just like, oh, who is he? Is he supposed to be someone big or whatever? And so for them, it's just sort of like, okay, what does that mean? And then for it to amount to nothing, it's just sort of like, okay, so what was all the hubbub about him being in the series?
It didn't amount to nothing. It just amounted to a boner joke.
Right.
And that's like a problem that the MCU tends to have, is that they have a really bad habit of sacrificing a great dramatic moment or sacrificing some epic thing for a quick little bottom of the barrel joke.
Oh, yeah.
They do that all the time. It's one of my biggest criticisms of the universe. Yes, exactly. Perfect example. Yeah, when they said his name was Ralph Boner, I was like, okay, that joke didn't land at all, but please God, tell me you have something to back it up with. And when that was it, I mean, that's like a whole letter grade off of the show just for that one joke for me. I'm just like, okay, nope, sorry.
Yeah.
All right, we got a super chat come in a little bit ago. A question. We'll tackle this one and then kind of go back to some of our positives on the show. Holiday Bros asks, what do you think Agatha's future will be with the MCU? Because Marvel plans ahead a lot, and she was definitely left alive for a reason.
I don't think so.
You don't think she has a future? So I start with you, Cody. You don't think she has any future?
I don't think so. I mean, unless they revisit WandaVision in some other series, she only has, I mean, I won't say never say never, but I feel like she was utilized for everything you're going to utilize that character for. And some would argue that she wasn't even necessary to the show, really. So it's, I don't see any reason. I mean, they left her alive because you can't have Wanda then kill somebody and still get away with everything. I think her fate was just imprisonment, you know, but figuratively.
Yeah,
it's kind of a strange one because they didn't give her enough of a like defining motivation to like give her the depth to make her someone that she's not like Loki, where you want them to keep showing up as this anti-hero type character. In the comics, the character's kind of a mentor, so they left it open to be that, but they didn't give her the depth for you necessarily to want that.
Yeah. Mm.
So because of the language that they used in the finale, I was left with the impression we'll probably see her again. I just don't know what that would mean.
Do you think, really quick, I'm just on this subject, do you think that they're going to structure the Disney Plus shows as being like required viewing to understand the MCU forward? Or do you think it's going to be kept pretty?
Okay, no, I say yes and no, because one of the interesting things about the where this show leaves off is that, like, you know, from where we see Wanda at the end of Endgame to where we see her at the end of this series, you don't have to watch this show in order to jump into Doctor Strange. Yeah, the end of it, it just shows her off in a cabin in the middle of the woods, and you can sort of like just piece together, okay, so she kind of just went and became a recluse and like improved her powers, whatever.
Yeah, this, where'd this new costume come from? This is
So it's like WandaVision almost becomes supplemental viewing that enhances your experience. And so I don't know if that's going to be the case going forward with the rest of the series, but I can definitely say that WandaVision is not required viewing in order to go see Multiverse of Madness. That's for sure.
Okay, we had a couple more super chats. We'll tackle these real quick and kind of get back to discussing a few more of the positives of it, I think. Brothers Bro talks about, says, Wanda is supposed to be more powerful than the Sorcerer Supreme, but Doctor Strange's fight with Thanos was 1,000 times more epic. I think the difference, though, is that one is trained and one is not. One is only discovering who they are. The other one is, like, she just thinks she got powers from a rock that makes her do weird things. And we knew she was super powerful, but she doesn't know what that means. And this show, maybe one of the things that's important about this show, is her realizing, wait, I'm super duper duper powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I see some people trying to compare the Quicksilver thing to the Mandarin twist in Iron Man 3. I don't think it's a one-to-one comparison, because I think that the bait and switch in Iron Man 3 works because it ties into playing into the fears of like the American public through media and stuff like that. Like, there is a purpose to it. You might not like the switch because the character did not amount to what you thought it was going to be, but there is a narrative purpose and it delivers on that purpose. When it comes to Evan Peters, you know, bait and switch in WandaVision, there's really no purpose other than for Agatha to just sort of like, you know, get inside Wanda's head and manipulate her. And the actual character of Pietro or whatever, Ralph Boner or whoever, he's a no one.
Mr. And it's just Boner is what I like.
Mr. Boner. It's just stunt casting. And that's probably the worst thing you could do.
That's a good way to put it. And I think that's like, I can see where on a disappointment level, there's a comparison. But I think Shane Black's script, I think, was much more intentional with what it did. Janice Scooter said, I may be the only one who caught this. The lake that Wanda was staying at looked a lot like Aquila Lake from X2 X-Men United, where Jean Grey sacrificed herself to save the team from the big mass of water. I hadn't thought about that. I think there is maybe, I mean, certainly superficially speaking, there's something to that, but I haven't. It's been about a year since I watched X2, so I don't have it on the mind to be able to make a direct comparison. That is interesting. And people have, of course, made comparisons between Scarlet Witch and Dark Phoenix as of recently. And then we had one more come in from CBMF Productions say, with what happened with Evan Peters, does that temper your expectations for Spider-Man 3 with all the returning cast members?
No, I would say no, because they're like confirmed to be coming back as their respective characters. Right. Like this, like Evan Peters was just said to be in WandaVision. And so, and without saying like he was going to be Quicksilver, we were like, oh, okay, so he's going to be Quicksilver, because why else would they bring him in there? And if he wasn't going to be Quicksilver, you should have specified. In the case of Spider-Man 3, we know that Alfred Molina is coming back as Doc Ock. We know that Jamie Foxx is coming back as Electro. And so it's like they might be playing Elseworld versions of those characters, but they are playing those characters.
Yeah, it doesn't really affect my expectations. I don't know. I still think in the back of my head that they're just going to keep the Spider-Man castings to the close to the chest until maybe middle of the year to hype everybody up. I'm still really excited for the potential of Spider-Man 3, regardless if everything besides that disappoints me this year from the MCU.
All righty. With that said, going back to some of the positives, I think one thing we could probably all agree on is that this was finally the MCU doing something totally out there in left field. And maybe that's what makes some the finale somewhat disappointing, is that it felt like them playing it safe, going back into their usual bag of tricks.
Yeah.
But sitcoms of the decades, and it's kind of like Twilight Zone-y and like conspiracy stuff. You're guessing as to what's going on. I think all of that is kind of what the MCU's needed. And we've been saying that. One of the big criticisms, there's a formula they follow, play it safe. And then this was something very different. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. I think it's tricky, because it's like, yeah, they did try and do something different. And I think a lot of the first half of the season, where it's just like contained to the hex and stuff like that, they were doing something different. And it was an interesting exploration of, you know, Wanda's character and Vision's character. But you, like you said, the finale kind of, they were afraid to commit, and I have no idea why they were afraid to commit. Like, there shouldn't have been, I don't know, like some, I don't know. It just like I guess what you were saying, it sort of just like divulged into like classic MCU shtick. And that's not what we wanted from this show at all. And I guess I just, for the life of me, I can't figure out why they were afraid to go to like just commit to a certain direction. It's like people were willing to accept the weird. They were willing to accept like a positive subversion of like expectations. But you like you got too afraid, and then you subverted in the wrong way after everyone was like, yeah, let's go crazy and all that stuff. And that's the real disappointment of the show. For again, for as much as I like it, that is like the thing that I just keep scratching my head about. And I'm like, why did you do the things that you did? Like all the side characters, like they didn't need to be there. We didn't need Jimmy. We didn't need Darcy. I mean, if you're going to include Monica, make her a part of like the narrative, not just like a two scene type of character to set up Captain Marvel 2. It just a lot of questionable choices.
Yeah, agreed. It was, if nothing else, like it'll be fun to kind of go back to. I still have not watched it all in one succession. I've only seen all the episodes once. So it'd be fun to go back to and just watch it as a four and a half hour movie and kind of see how it plays that way. But yeah, I'm a big fan of doing something different. It doesn't always pay off. Sometimes you do something different and it's just too different. But I think this was, as much as I was really worried it wasn't going to be in the first three episodes, I think it's what the MCU needed after Endgame. That, you know, that kind of put the cap on the expectations for that era. And I think this sets it up as you guys don't have any idea what you're in for. And I like that.
Okay. Real quick, let's kind of shoot off some, just our like kind of favorite things about the show, favorite experience with like in real quick, 15 seconds, favorite things. I love that it was something I could watch with my kids. Like even my 2-year-old loves the first three episodes, love that it's different, intriguing. I loved the guessing game for all the weeks, which is makes it's kind of the conflict of like then being frustrated by some of the answers. And just in general, the spending so much time with Wanda and Vision, they're so fun together.
Mm-hmm.
Griffin, real quick, fire off someone's and we'll Cody, you'll have your shot in just a second.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just like some of the things I loved about it.
Fire it off real quick, like three sentences of favorite stuff.
Yeah, sure. Like the writing up until the end, I thought was really great. The way the characters were written, fully fleshed out, and then just like the intimate moments that we got, not only between Wanda and Vision, but just like sort of Wanda on her own, Vision on her own, that sort of thing. It's some of the best like character exploration we've gotten in the MCU ever. So that's what I love most about it.
Cody. I love the fun novelty of all the different sitcoms and kind of guessing each week what era or what show they were going to mimic. That was fun. Malcolm in the Middle especially was one where I was like, oh, that's right up my alley. That's my childhood. That was great. I loved getting to have some closure with Vision. I feel like the journey that Wanda goes through with her closure is very similar to the audience in that regard. And I loved getting to know Wanda more and get more intrigued with her. And like we were saying, with something different, I love that we have something this unique in the MCU. I hope we get more of it.
Cool. A couple of super chats came in. Holiday Bro says, agreed with Cody. Cody gets one more extra point. But all right. With her popularity with the fans and lights, like you're going to need more and be seeing. I feel like she has to come back. She was, especially her song was like number one on iTunes or something like that. Who would have guessed that like that would get me that popular? But that's the world that we live in. Something like that could go viral. Mm-hmm. And then the Yibbly Lock Dem Doors. Okie dokie.
Baby Lock guys, Dem Doors.
There we go. You got it. You can read better than I can. Are you guys ready for Falcon and the Winter Soldier? Yes, absolutely. And I think that the way that it works out that we have these two, and this is what we discussed 2 months ago, is that Falcon and the Winter Soldier feels like the safe bet, them doing something that you see the trailer, you know exactly what it is. Whereas WandaVision, you saw the first three episodes and you still didn't know what it was. And yeah. So I think having them is kind of that 1-2 punch. I don't, you know, whether which one was better, we'll find out all that fun stuff. But yeah, absolutely. Just spending time with some fun characters on a spy show. That sounds awesome to me.
Yeah, that's my most anticipated show that they have. I have a sneaking suspicion it's not going to be as straightforward as we're thinking. I think on its surface, this feels like it's going to be more traditional MCU. I feel like if they were as ambitious as they were with WandaVision, I think we're in for some surprises.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I know it'll touch on a lot of like social and political aspects, which I think definitely in a show like that is needed. But I mean, listen, I'm just looking forward to like seeing those guys back together and like continuing the story in the Captain America side of the universe. Because, I mean, listen, I mean, we all know that that's the most interesting side of things here, you know, with them and just like, you know, Zemo and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very excited for it. Yeah.
Brothers, bros talk about his thoughts on X-Files style show starring Jimmy Woo. I'd be game for it. They've got 1,000 things announced. There's a lot of interesting things that they could do. I'm enjoying him. I like really enjoy Randall Park and stuff. And so you team him up with the right person. There's a lot of fun things you could do with that. But, you know, they've announced 1 million shows. So, you know, amongst them, where would it rank? I don't know. If they said they were doing it, I'd get a little grin on my face.
Yeah.
Okay, back to our next kind of main topic of this. Who is the real Vision of WandaVision? I mean, I think it's pretty clearly Wanda's the villain. They just didn't want to commit to that. Mm-hmm. If you look at the morality of the show, she's the main villain. She's the person that puts a bunch of people at risk. Agatha's like a side villain that wants to take advantage of her trauma and what her power and everything. Hayward... It's another one. It's like they wanted to have bad guy person, but you just, as soon as you tell the story from the perspective of the people in the town, they don't care that he wants to make a weapon. They don't care that he doesn't really care about them. He cares about the fact that there's someone trying to stop the person that has torturing them. That's all they would care about. So if you tell the story from a different perspective, it's tough to even make the argument that he's all that bad. And some people are like, but he broke the Sokovia Accords. He just survived a 5-year apocalypse. Who cares about the Sokovia Accords? There's an apocalypse. Half the population disappeared.
He was jaywalking in episode 7.
I mean, it's like one of those ones for me that I was like, I get, like, he's a jerk. I get that the show wants to present him as a super. He's ready to kill kids. Mm-hmm. Fake kids inside of a hex that mm-hmm. Wanda eliminated from existence. And I mean, it's just the had some really weird conversations with people. Not like felt like they didn't want to wrestle with the reality that Wanda did something unforgivable. Like,
yeah,
you can't just shrug it off because you feel bad for her. Griffin, who is the real villain?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's Wanda, but again, like you said, they were afraid to commit to that. So she almost comes off being like an anti-hero. Agatha isn't even really a villain. She's just sort of like Agatha is an anti-hero because she just wanted like Wanda's. Yeah, exactly. Which I think that's an interesting sort of thing to pose is like people who like, you know, leech off of the mental state of people in like an unstable place or whatnot. I think that was interesting. And again, they didn't really do anything with it, but like, yeah, Agatha, like, she just sort of ends up being this just, like, cackling, you know, Malekith-esque character. But I agree, like, yeah, the real villain is Wanda, but they didn't really want to say that. Yeah, because, like, Hayward, I mean, listen, he was a dick, but he was just going in there to do his job. I think the only thing with him is that he did resurrect Vision against his final will. So it is sort of like, okay, so his, like, the ends don't necessarily justify, or sorry, the means don't necessarily justify the ends or whatever in terms of that. But if you look at what he's trying to do, he's trying to stop a weapon of mass destruction from destroying people. So it's like, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, he's not necessarily the hero, but I wouldn't pin everything on him. So, yeah, it's should be Wanda. And I mean, I tend to believe that it is Wanda.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think there was a bit of that was another big missed opportunity by the end because they could have very easily kind of taken the Breaking Bad route with her to where, you know, she's your protagonist. She's the one you root for. She's the focus of the story. But the farther you get through it, you realize that she's the true villain of the story. And the other villains that are antagonists for your main character are simply just a different perspective that we're not given. Like Hayward, a lot of missed opportunity there with making him much more of a complicated character, making him much more of a spawn of conversation of whose side are you on? What are you doing? I mean, they could have easily just cut out a lot of those elements of him doing really just jerk things and kept him a more level-headed military guy. And I think it would have made for a much better show to where he's the antagonist until he's not.
Right. And I think that even as just as someone that creates videos talking about the show where I have to have conversations in the comment section, because the show didn't develop him properly, it's led to a bunch of just wacky conversations where like it the show gives him a motivation. He survived the apocalypse. Therefore, he wants a weapon to be able to protect himself from superpowered people. It's right there in the show. That's not my reading into it. Those are things he said. That's the path. But then it doesn't. It turns him into the villain by the end of it. Where you're like, what? Come on, guys. If you could have stuck this a little bit, you would have said something much richer and communicated something deeper and had something far more intriguing because it's complicated and it sticks even with what the show was always about, which was nuance and layers of gray and things like that. It was never about the simplicity. It was never a simple story of good guys defeating bad guy. It was a story about someone in their trauma did something horrible until the last episode where it was about heroes defeating villains. But then you go, but they're not actually real villains when you get to kind of the end there. So that's maybe why the ending doesn't land all that well, because it feels untrue. It's not The Incredibles. They have that shot that everyone was like, look, it's The Incredibles. They're referencing The Incredibles.
Well, that entire third act was like The Incredibles, the battle sequence. Like, yeah.
But it's
Have you seen the video floating around today where somebody took the clip of Clark Kent taking out one of Zod's minions, and it's filmed and paced exactly like whenever Vision comes and takes out White Vision?
Oh, no.
I haven't seen it.
It's pretty funny because it is very eerily close. But yeah, that'll fuel some Marvel versus DC stuff.
OK, next topic on this one. I think we only have two more on WandaVision. If you could change just one thing about WandaVision that would have improved your thoughts on it, what would it be, Griffin?
literally just the finale. Like, make the finale an hour and a half long, and I think you could justify a lot of the stuff that goes on in there. Because I was like, honest to God, I mean, go watch the video I did on it. Like, I literally said up until the last episode, this show is freaking amazing. I love it. It's so compelling. And I stand by everything I said in that video. But, like, the finale was such a jumbled mess, just in terms of character, of, like, servicing all the characters, in terms of the action, the way the action was shot and everything. So, I honestly, if I had to change one thing, it would be the final episode. Just do what you need to do in order to service everyone and, like, tie up those loose ends, and don't give Wanda an out like that. You know, clearly paint her as the villain of this show.
Cody, how about you?
Echo pretty much everything that Griffin said. It all the problems for me really lie in the final episode. Obviously, there's some things like the casting and the choice of Evan Peters. It's not just the final episode's fault, but if you could just retool everything that they're doing in the finale, I think that would be forgivable. But all of the problems kind of just dropped on my lap in that last 45 minutes.
I think for me, I think it was the bait and switch that just kind of that they went down that path. They designed a show that the whole concept of the first three episodes is like, what on earth is going on? Who's this B guy? Why is they're freaking out? How is Wanda kind of cutting in and out? What is this? And then you get to the end and all it, they're teasing this, and it was not that. It was the much more basic version of it. And you can't choose a format that's intrigue based. Or the whole idea of when you do something like that, the payoff has to work, and the payoff did not live up to the tease. And so you almost start wondering, would it have been better if they wanted to make this exploration of grief? Would it have been better if they had chosen to tell the story more straightforward? And right from the get-go, you're following Wanda in her trauma and kind of know what's going on. But really diving into the morality of it. It's a totally different show if you do it that way. You restructure this and you know what's going on the whole time. So I don't know if that would work, but anyway, I'm talking out loud, but that's what happens when you're trying to block people in the chat while at the same time talking.
Dude's relentless. Yeah. I almost wish they didn't even feel like they needed to have action in the finale. I almost would have appreciated if they would have just stuck with the intrigue. I mean, like, this is a wild, you know, comparison that doesn't work at all except for this context. But, like, you take a movie like Joker that's so anti what you expect the DC movie to be. And if this show had gone away and went nine episodes without having a single action sequence and just stuck with intrigue, I think that the success of that would have given them a little bit more breathing room to do riskier things and not say, all right, well, we got to have a fight scene in the act three. We got to have some floaty red orbs shot at people because people expect that. I think that people trust the MCU enough at this point where they don't need that. And it's clear in this show that was a detriment to what they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They were afraid to commit. And I completely agree with you. I mean, that was one of the things that I was saying when I was talking about the last episode on my channel last week, was that, like, I didn't need this action finale. You don't need to, like, force the MCU, like, third act into the confines of this story, because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. And you can spend the time on the characters and have it be more of like a, I don't know, just like have it be more of like a character drama. And I think like the MCU has done so much that they have earned that opportunity. Like, again, they were, you know, people going into this show are expecting like an MCU sort of thing. And then when we're getting more information about it, we learn, okay, it's not necessarily going to be that. So it's going to subvert our expectations, but in a way where we're willing to accept the weird. Then we get into the final episode and it's like they didn't commit to that, and they subverted in the other way after we had already been like on board with all the stuff that they were doing. So, again, like, it's just baffling to me that they were like, okay, we'll just wrap this up in a bunch of laser beams fighting and like witches, you know, up in the air. It was stupid.
So, but I even one of the things I mentioned in my original review after the first three episodes was that they created an expectation with 23 Marvel movies that the first three episodes are something totally different. So you don't know how to process it. And as you said, this almost is the opposite. Once you get into it and you see how it does tie into the universe, once you have all the context, it creates a new expectation, which the new expectation was intrigue, answers, mystery box, what's in the box, that sort of stuff. And then it didn't, it delivered the thing that you normally would have wanted with the beginning of the show, but not what you wanted by the end of the show, which is kind of a interesting way to kind of do things the way it played out. And maybe where so much of the frustration is coming from. Final WandaVision discussion, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Justice League and our final kind of expectations going into it. Final question on WandaVision. What is next for Wanda? How does Wanda tie into Multiverse of Madness? How do we think the pieces are now gonna tie together? Griffin, you're up first.
Oh man, I really don't even know, because as much as it sort of set up Doctor Strange, it didn't really set up Doctor Strange 2. It just sort of like set her character up as now, you know, we know that she's more powerful than Doctor Strange. We know that she's going to be involved somehow, and she's obviously reading through the Darkhold in order to, like, you know, master her abilities and such. And we already see in that, like, post-credit scene that she's able to do what Doctor Strange does, but she's able to, like, walk around and, like, make tea and stuff, while Doctor Strange usually has to be, like, sleeping when he does the astral projection thing.
That's what I mentioned. I at the end of my review, I was like, well, there's, like, two of her walking around. People are like, oh, he's just in the astral projection, or just like what Doctor Strange did. It's like, well, not just like what Doctor Strange did. Like, she's hanging out outside looking at the scenery, fishing or whatever. So it's not just like what he did. It's what he did plus this other thing.
Exactly. Yeah, which I think is really cool. But I think the key is probably in the fact that she heard like either Billy or Tommy sort of like screaming her name in the void or whatever. So I think that might be an entryway into this, is she might be like going through the multiverse in order to get her kids back. That's one theory. And maybe she'll need the help of Strange or whatever. I don't know. I think the interesting thing about this show is that while it's supposed to tie into that, it doesn't really set the stage for what the story is going to be about, which is a good thing. Cause I don't really want to know what's going to happen in Doctor Strange 2, cause that's going to be just this wild otherworldly sort of thing. But at least we know where Wanda will be at the start of that film. And I think that's ultimately what it does.
What do you think's happening, Cody?
If I had to guess, I mean, Griffin was kind of heading that direction, but if I had to guess, she's going to be exploring the multiverse, trying to achieve what she did with this hex, trying to, if nothing else, just find her kids. I don't know if Vision will be involved, but I think Doctor Strange is going to be trying to stop her. I think she's going to be the villain of the movie to a certain extent, maybe not evil, but she's the one that he has to stop. And he's going to be following her through the multiverse, chasing her. If I, with no knowledge of what the movie is, coming off of this show, that's where I would assume things would go.
Baron Mordo's still out there, who's going around and trying to kill all of the remaining sorcerers and you know, people who have magical abilities. And so, is he gonna like kidnap Wanda or something, or try and kill Wanda? How much of a villain is he going to be in Doctor Strange 2? Because they really set him up to be something special at the end of Doctor Strange 1. So I don't know.
5 years ago. We haven't seen him since.
Really a shame. Really a shame, because Chiwetel Ejiofor is excellent.
Oh, yeah.
So as for me, what do I think is next for Wanda? I mean, I think she's going to be antagonistic in it. I think she's heading down a path that's only going to make things worse for herself. That kind of perpetual this, the she's a tragic character, but she keeps heading down the wrong path. She keeps making mistakes. She signed up for the hide to team up with terrorists. She blew up a building trying to save people. In her grief, created this hex thing. Like, she is her own worst enemy. She's not nefarious. She's not driven by malice in most times. Sometimes it's targeted towards individuals, but generally speaking, she's just trying to cope with life. She thinks her kids are out there, or she's hearing kids in her voice. And I think there's something to the idea that that's going to lead to some trouble with all of this. All righty. From there, we are like, what, 9 days away from the release of the Snyder Cut? 8 days away from the Snyder Cut.
Less, but I won't count my chickens. We'll see.
It's true. So the Zack Snyder Cut, the crazy fan favorite project that I didn't think would ever happen, or I didn't think would happen for 15 years. I thought we would see it 15 years from now. And that's not a cynical thing. That's not, it's literally just because it makes and has made Warner Brothers look really bad. Everything we've learned about it puts Warner Brothers in a bad light, in which case it's uncommon that a studio would be so willing to openly admit their mistakes in this regard and invest a huge chunk of money to try and create a new version of a movie they already spent $300 million into that didn't make as much as they thought. And now they're like, let's try it a second time. There's not really precedent for that happening in this sort of time frame. The closest to it that I can think of on this scale would be like the Richard Donner cut for Superman 2, which came out 25 years after the original film came out. Mm-hmm. And like it's a similar sort of idea of two directors, competing visions, producer drama, and massive reshoots. But it was 25 years later, not within a handful of years. This thing is finally coming out. So I just wanted to talk a little bit, our final expectations. How much better do we think it'll be? Do we think it'll be better? Do we think it'll be worse? What are all of our expectations on all of that fun stuff? For me, my starting point is that I think it'll be on par with the reception to Man of Steel and Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
That Zack Snyder has a very divisive view of these DC characters. That's what makes it interesting. It's like spicy food. Some people love spicy food and some people can't handle a bite of spicy food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Zack Snyder when it comes to DC characters. And his fanboys are going to eat it up and love it, and they'll see it as the completion of this masterpiece trilogy, or at least the next piece of his trilogy, this thing that he's working on. I think a bunch of the people that hated Batman v Superman thought Man of Steel was way too dark. This is more of that. They're going to get more of the thing they didn't like before. I don't think it's going to win them over. And then you have people like me that really like Man of Steel. I think Batman v Superman is good, ambitious, but flawed. And I think that's what this is going to be. I think it's going to be ambitious, but flawed. And I think I'll receive it a lot better because it's going to be one unified vision rather than a gross Frankenstein monster that of competing visions that do not remotely complement one another. Joss Whedon, his strengths in no way complement Zack Snyder's, and whatever went on during that shoot, clearly the actors were checked out during the reshoots, and you see that on screen. So I'm expecting a significantly better film because it's a unified vision, but I think it'll be just as divisive as Batman v Superman was. Cody, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit exhausted with it to the point where I wish I was more excited for it, but it's just been such a huge topic for years now. And you get the two screaming camps of, you know, Zack Snyder sucks, everything that he does is terrible, and he's a genius, this is going to be the greatest comic book movie of all time, and you're all going to see. And so I'm just kind of quietly waiting for the movie, but I'm right there with you. I think that anybody, whether you're a Zack Snyder fanatic or not, that thinks that this is going to like blow everybody's minds and be like this huge saving grace for his version of DC, I think you're out of your mind. I think that it's going to be exactly the same reception that he always gets in the DC universe. And I'm with you. I love Man of Steel. Man of Steel is one of those movies that every time I watch it, I like it more. And BVS is something that it has a lot of awesome stuff in it. And it has a lot of very baffling, weird decisions in it that kind of every time that I watch that, the things that I love more. The things that I dislike more. And I expect that it'll be on par with that for Justice League. It looks cool, and I think that it would have to be an extreme dumpster fire to not be better than the one that we already got. I would be shocked if I watched this and said, wow, I prefer the other one.
I would too. And some of that's on the pure level of because of the quality of that. A lot of it is simply because I think that movie is gross.
Yeah, I'm with you. I haven't even had the ability to rewatch it since theaters because everything that I've learned about it since then, aside from it just not being that great of a movie, it just kind of makes me not want anything to do with it. I expect it's going to be a lot of things that I think are going to be great to kind of to carry through some of the things that he set up in the previous two movies, I also have a fear that there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be left hanging on the hook. And I don't know if we're going to get a follow up to that. That's my biggest fear, is that we're going to watch this. We're going to go, great. Now what?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that this is probably going to frustrate when we get to the end of Griffin. What are your expectations?
Well, just off of that point, I think there is actually a real shot that we do get to see this universe continued on HBO Max, because they don't really have a whole lot of original content. You already have a built-in fan base that is rabid for this sort of content. And I think that, I don't expect the Snyder Cut to do like massive, massive numbers. I do think they will do big enough numbers to warrant continuing his vision on HBO Max, maybe seeing some like the Deathstroke thing that he had in mind, the Ben Affleck Batman thing he had in mind, and so on and so forth. Maybe continuing the Justice League story. We saw those leaked scripts, which I think had some really interesting ideas in it. And so I think a great thing about HBO Max is the opportunity to allow Zach to continue this sort of thing. In terms of the film itself, I mean, it really doesn't matter. It's a movie made for the fans. Like, it's a movie that is for all the people that like worked hard to like champion it, everything that they have done. And so like, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. It's going to exist. And it is that hard work and that dedication and that loyalty, paying off. But also, like you said, I think it's easily going to be better than the Joss Whedon corporate trash thing that we got, which is it's not even a movie. So like, yeah, I mean, and also, I mean, realistically, it doesn't matter what critics think of this film. It doesn't matter, because like, it's going to have its fans, the people who are primed and ready to watch this movie, who have been since day one, are going to eat it up. They're going to love it. It's going to be giving them exactly what they want. It's Zack Snyder. Like, first of all, I mean, we just go back to Man of Steel when they said that they were announcing Zack Snyder is going to be the key creative driving force of their cinematic universe. Warner Brothers should have known then that it would be divisive, because Zack Snyder isn't someone who makes films for like, you know, everyone or whatever. He obviously has a distinct vision in a way he likes telling stories. And a lot of people like that. The people who do are loyal and they are rabid. But like, if there's also like plenty of people who don't like that. And so, I mean, going back to that decision, if they really wanted to, you know, create a cinematic universe akin to Marvel or whatever, they shouldn't have chosen someone like Zack Snyder as their driving force. And their biggest problem was, going away from that vision because they got scared. And then we saw what happened when they went away from that vision. The end results or what they released into the public in theaters was not as good as the stuff that we got, like the BVS Ultimate Edition, or what I'm anticipating we get with the Snyder Cut here. And so, you know, I think it'll be, if you like Zack Snyder, I'm sure you'll really like the film. If you don't, then, you know, just...
Right.
You know, don't watch it. I don't know what to say, but realistically, it doesn't matter, because it's going to be a success.
Yeah, I don't expect it to win any new Zack Snyder DC fans.
No,
it's kind of critic proof in that regard. And in fact, his critics will almost be happy. Like if critics, his fans will almost love it if critics hate it, because they love that us versus them, mentality. And Zack Snyder is almost the antithesis of Disney.
Disney, he really is. Yeah.
Makes broad appeal. Everyone is going to love it. It's designed for everyone to like it. That's like, people like, Disney pays off the critics. Like, I haven't gotten my check yet, and I give them a lot of positive reviews. Their formula is to make very broad appeal movies. Zack Snyder makes movies that appeal to a smaller group of people, but they fall in love with this niche take. And his view of the world. I mean, you go back, like, starts off with a zombie movie, and then you move into 300, which most people if you like 300, you love 300. You don't have people that are like, 300 is okay. Like, you don't have many people like that. They're like, 300, this is awesome. I love that this thing, it exists. But it has like a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. Because a bunch of people watched it and they went, what? It's a bunch of shirtless guys screaming out wanting to die. Huh? And then the people that saw that trailer and went, yeah, every single one of those people loved that movie and still love that movie. And then, then he does Watchmen, and then he does this deconstruction of DC characters. He's a divisive anti-Disney, not against Disney. Yeah. Because you see him, he seems like a super nice guy. Mm-hmm. But in the way that he makes movies, it's the opposite of what they're trying to do. Mike's Carpet Movie says, manage your expectations with some of the CGI in Zack Snyder's Justice League. It's probably a very reasonable, fair thing to do. $70 million is a ton of money. $70 million is not a ton of money for a 4-hour-long movie.
Yeah.
And he said he's not using anything that Joss Whedon. So you think how all the million, hundreds of millions they put into Joss Whedon's not useful at all for this one.
Right.
CBMF Production says, regardless of success, would you rather see Snyder continue with his Justice League trilogy or see him do different things? I'd rather see the latter. Dawn of the Dead 2004 remains my favorite film from him. Well, it's tough to say at this particular moment because we're at a point in time where he hasn't really put out a movie in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're about to get 2 movies from him in 2 months.
Yeah.
And so we're about to see the 2 different paths. That test is happening right now. Because we might see this Justice League and be like, that's a really cool, interesting take. Huh. Wow. I really want to see these threads tied off. Or we might see it and be like, this is flawed. I like that we got this weird, dark take. Let's head down that other path. Maybe we see I keep saying Army of Darkness. that's something different. I need to see this movie. Like, yeah. I love that he's returning to the zombie genre. And even I kind of love that it's with Netflix, who will be like, yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Well, even then, he's developing so much more, expanding that Army of the Dead universe on Netflix. Like, I think they're going to do like an anime, and then there's like a spinoff series or something that they're already like shooting and on the works with. So it's like, we're going to get other stuff from him. I think there's room for him to do both. Like, he can do the DC stuff on HBO Max and then also go off and do these like zombie films or whatever on Netflix. And so, like, I think that's sort of like the great thing about the fact that he's kind of got a toe in both realms right now, especially right now. So yeah, I'm down for it. I'm a massive fan of his. I've always really gravitated towards his movies and his style of storytelling. So whatever it is that he's doing, I'll be really interested in checking out.
Comment. Yeah. I had to bring this one up when I saw this one. Tony Stark says 300 was diet version of Gladiator. I would so fundamentally disagree with that. I think that it's, if you watch 300,
it's Gladiator on Gladiator, Monster.
It's just not that.
It's not even close.
Like, I get in the terms of human history, they're like parts of the world. Okay. They're not terribly far from each other, but they're just not the same. They're not even the same genre. One is designed to be like pure experiential band of brothers in this crazy Zack Snyder, Frank Miller world. And the other one is like a big epic drama tragedy. Like, they're totally different genres. So anyway, Cody, we cut you off.
No, you're good. I want to see him do something else. Even if I love Justice League, I'm cool with him staying on to like maybe help write or give them like story ideas or them carrying through with some of the things that he's already set up, provided that they want to do that. But I don't want him to just stick around and just continue directing Justice League movies and direct a Batman movie or whatever else. You very, very rarely see instances where a filmmaker stays on one property for more than 3 films and continues to succeed. Oftentimes you see them stumble at the third one. So I would rather see him go off and do things. I mean, like you're just talking about the diversity of what he's done with Dawn of the Dead, 300, Watchmen. I still have not seen Sucker Punch. It has its haters, it has its fans, but such a wildly different genres that he's going for. I want to see him continue to do that. I don't want him to just become the other DC universe guy.
Yeah. And that's one thing we've talked about many, many, many times here on the podcast, is that most creatives do best when they change things up. If they stay in one thing too long, that normally you reach that point in time where they get creative bankruptcy.
Even Christopher Nolan's not immune to it.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many times that third movie is the dud, and there's just people that are like that, that they're so good when they come in you need them to apply that bag of tricks to something new from time to time. And I want them to.
Yes.
The same reason that I, as much as I love someone doing one thing, that's why I want to see them do something else, even if I might not like it. Which brings us to our next topic of the conversation. New movies have started to come out.
Yes.
One of them from the Russo brothers, who spent a decade working on Marvel movies with unbelievable success, to say the least. Critical, commercial success, great benefit to this franchise that I absolutely love. And then it was time for them to follow it up. And this little movie called Cherry debuted in theaters a couple weeks back, hits Apple TV Plus in a couple of days. I believe all three of us were pretty negative on Cherry, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
For all pretty much the same reasons, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the immediate response would be, is that a, say that we were wrong, or was I wrong to want them to do something different? No, I'm actually totally fine with the fact that they had a dud after the MCU, because I think that you'd have to do something different. And I'm okay with the fact that I wasn't terribly a big fan of Cherry, because I think it's worthwhile to test things out. But to real quick, without obviously no spoilers, because a lot of people haven't seen Cherry. It was a movie with some great performances, but it just kind of feels all over the place, and it can't decide what it wants to be and what matters most. Griffin, I think you saw it first. What's your deeply thought about perspective on this one?
Well, I'll say it's a movie with a great performance, not performances. So
that's true. That's true.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's frustrating, because I think there's a good movie in there, but the Russos sort of get bogged down in like the overly stylized, like Goodfellas casino nature of trying to tell this story. I mean, it almost would have worked better as like a mini series, if I'm being honest, because it's like, it starts out as like this really awful, cringy teen romance. Then it goes into like Full Metal Jacket and Jarhead. And then it moves into like some like junky, tragic drug story, mixed with like a crime thriller or like a heist movie or whatever. And so it's just sort of like, It's a bunch of interesting concepts that never get on the same wavelength and never mesh the way that they think it's going to. And on top of that, they don't even like, they've been preaching that this is a movie that's really going to like explore the opioid crisis and explore like everything that's going down. And it's really important to them, coming from Ohio, to touch on stuff like this. But they don't even they barely even do it. They hardly scratch the surface, because
I think that's so much of my frustration by the end, is that it's like, veterans, PTSD, opioid crisis, financial crisis, and it doesn't say anything about any of them.
No, and that's the biggest thing. They had a real opportunity here, especially because they've talked about the fact that they have known people who have suffered from this stuff, and they had a real opportunity to bring their personal experiences and infuse it into the movie to give us something, you know, truly spectacular. And especially with an actor like Tom Holland and the craftspeople that they had involved, they could have done that, but they just didn't. And a lot of it comes down to the script, which was co-written by their sister. And I'm really happy that they were able to do this as a family thing, but I don't think it worked out ultimately in the long run. So yeah, it just a really massive, disappointment, all around.
Yeah. My main thoughts kind of summed up in three was, Tom Holland is a fantastic actor, and I can't wait to see what he does. Tom Holland is going to have a hell of a time breaking typecast. Mm-hmm. And why Cherry? That was kind of my main three thoughts kind of summed up by the end. I thought Tom Holland was awesome, but it took me half of the movie to not see Peter Parker. And that's a problem. As great as he is, when you only see him as Peter Parker for what, 5 years, it's mm-hmm. hard to see him in something that even something as different as this. You couldn't get farther away from Peter Parker and you still see Peter Parker until he's pushing guts back into somebody in Afghanistan.
True, yeah.
And when you get to the end of it, for all the reasons you were saying about, you know, all right, we're going to cover, you know, the romance side of it really didn't work for me at all, because I didn't like their chemistry. I didn't even like the actress that portrayed his girlfriend.
Horribly
the whole movie, I'm just like, why are you doing all of this for her? Like, there's nothing about this girl that merits all these huge, gigantic decisions that you're making for her. So that kind of fell apart. But if you're going to
real quickly, like even from her perspective, like why would she stay with him after all of that? You know, like he's just, you know, dragging her down a dark path and she knows that it's wrong. And also you want to talk about like Tom Holland looking young in the role and like almost
typecast. She looked like she was 14.
Exactly. It was so weird. It's like when Tom Holland is the mature force in this relationship, like
even when he gets his little mustache.
Yeah,
he
looks the stash. Yeah. So weird, dude. Oh my God.
I laughed out loud at that scene. I was like, you're telling us that this is, what was it, like 10 years, something like that. It was some huge number. You would have needed makeup. And all they do is they put a Charlie Chaplin on him and he walks out. And I'm like, you look like a 16-year-old with a mustache.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Bunch of movies have come out. We'll kind of talk about them quickly. We had a super chat come in. The Disney Nerd, I think you should get a few mods for your chat. These spammers are obnoxious. This guy literally has like 1,000 accounts. So
yeah, all three of us are mods and it's not making any difference. I mean, you can only block them so fast. By the time YouTube blocks them, they've activated their other account.
And you're not wrong. Even the Disney Nerd, I know who you are. You're a potential person I should probably add in as a mod. I just haven't yet, but yeah, there, even if we had a ton of people modding, they are very, very persistent today with what they're trying to do. So Tom Holland is just cranking out the disappointments. And so 2 weeks in a row, we're having disappointing Tom Holland movies. He also had Chaos Walking. This one was rumored to be unreleasable. Yeah. And it has Daisy Ridley in it, Mads Mikkelsen, and it's from the director of Edge of Tomorrow, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Born Identity. This is so much talent in front of and behind the camera, and it's based off of a popular set of books, and it's another one that you just feel the reshoots all over it. You can tell that they didn't know how to tell this story, convert this book to the big screen. Either one of you guys see it?
I did not.
No, I didn't either. No.
It's like, I really like Doug Liman. I like this cast. I like this genre. My wife.
Someone is at the front door.
Sorry.
So I like this sort of thing. So it's watchable in that regard for me. But from there, it was, the last scene in it is the most overt reshoot that I've seen since, Henry Cavill's mustache disappeared. Like it's that level of like, they look different and it just feels like they're trying to tie everything up with a weekend of reshoots. Oh, they're finally free. Let's get this thing shot real quick. Yeah. Either one of you guys see Boss Level yet?
No,
not yet, but you got me excited for it.
Yeah, that one looks good.
We had such a funny conversation too, because he texted me and it just said Boss Level equals this or something like that. And we had just previously, we were talking about Coming to America. I was like, oh, so it's good. And he's like, no, Boss Levels. And I was like, I don't know what that is. I'm so confused.
So Boss Level is from Joe Carnahan, director of A-Team, The Gray, many other things. Frank Grillo is in the lead. The villain is Mel Gibson. And basically, it's a time loop action movie. If you like R-rated, hard R, like four grown-up action movies, it's a blast. Like, it's just, it has so much fun with the ultraviolence. And if that's your sort of thing, like it's mine, and I know it's Cody's, wherever Cody's at, with my point, then you want to check this one out. Griffin, have you seen anything that you don't think I've seen that we want to talk about, a new release that's coming out that's worth recommending?
I honestly, no, there really hasn't been a whole lot outside of like the ones you mentioned. I mean, really, this March is the month that really starts the big stuff. Well, and then it's funny. It's like we get a lot of big stuff in March, and then April's kind of a dud outside of Mortal Kombat.
Like, what are you talking about? Mortal Kombat's coming out.
Yeah, man. Mortal Kombat. Yeah, I haven't really watched anything new of note.
Cody, can you tell us about Wrong Turn? I've seen zero Wrong Turn movies. I don't even think I've seen.
I recommend that path in life.
I haven't even seen a trailer for the Wrong Turn series. Like, I don't even know anything about what Wrong Turn is. People are like, you should watch the new one and rank all of them. I was like,
No. You would have an extremely, if you couldn't take three Leprechaun movies, Sean, you're not going to make it through two Wrong Turn movies. And your wife might divorce you just for having it in her house. So before I even talk about Wrong Turn, I will say Tom Holland better pray to God that his whole pitch for being a young Nathan Drake pays off, because if that bombs, the dude's in trouble. Wrong Turn is a franchise that started back in 2003. It was just like a basic kind of middle of the road hillbilly cannibal slasher film that came out in
at hillbilly cannibals. That's
there you go. I was doing a stream with CP and I kept calling them killbilly Hannibals. Hannibal kept coming out of my mouth, but in summary, that actually works. Hannibal killbillies. But nonetheless, it came out when not a whole lot of slasher movies were coming out. So for whatever reason, it kind of stuck and got a straight to DVD franchise started. The first one's decent enough, if nothing else, for the cast. You've got Eliza Dushku. You've got a lot of people like Disney Channel alumni, which makes it even weirder. But that was what was memorable about it. It's a decent middle of the road slasher, but it's nothing that I would ever recommend to anybody that's unless you're just a slasher fan.
Right.
The rest of them are all straight to DVD slasher schlock. And at least two or three of them are some of the worst movies that I've ever seen. And that says a lot. I mean, these are bottom of the barrel bargain bin Walmart movies that were probably made for $20 so that they can make 40. But you have this new one that came out this year that the writer of the original film wrote, and it's a total revamp of the franchise, which angers a lot of Wrong Turn fans, which I didn't even know there was. But essentially, you have the same setup. You have a group of people that go off into the woods. They take a wrong turn and go where they shouldn't go. And rather than stumble upon a group of inbred hillbillies that want to eat them, they stumble upon a community of mountain dwellers that have cast society aside, and they have started their own old school, kind of like the village society, and now they have to deal with their law. It's by no means a perfect movie. None of the movies in this franchise are. I gave it 3.75 out of 5, and I'm a slasher fan, so the average person might say it's, you know, 3 out of 5, something like that. But it's despite having some terrible dialogue in the first 40 minutes, it's a movie that I think really does do some interesting things. If you're a fan of the franchise, or at least the first movie, I definitely think it's worth watching just for seeing how different that it is. But it kind of takes the movie Midsommar and pushes it through the slasher, you know, formula a little bit. It's worth checking out. I'll say that.
And as you were someone that wasn't a fan of Midsommar, that would mean that you liked Wrong Turn more than that one.
While acknowledging that Midsommar is infinitely a better made film, absolutely, I enjoyed it more than Midsommar. Midsommar, I walked out and went, I want that 3 hours back. It felt like 5.
Alrighty, with that said, we're going to close out the main section of this live stream. But I mean, if you're here on the live stream, we are going to continue with Q&A. So if you want to start throwing questions into the chat, we will start tackling those, answering your questions. If you're listening to the audio version of this, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to leave a review or rating wherever you are at. And hopefully we will be back in 2 weeks talking about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And as always, keep talking movies and TV too much.